Hello, this is Pat McDonald, your host for Vermont Viewpoint. This is Thursday, April 18th, and I mentioned that because before I introduce my guests, I want to tell you that this is USS Vermont Day in Vermont, and there'll be a resolution made, read on the House floor this morning, and the USS Vermont support group, of which I am a member, will be in the card room ready to answer any of your questions. We've got several guests who will be with us, and I think you'll find it exciting. So come on over to the State House. As soon as I finish here, I'll be heading right to the card room, and we'll see you for the next couple hours after that. So thank you. So back to the show. My guests this morning come from Onion River Animal Hospital in Berlin, Vermont. And it's Karen Bradley, who's a DMV. DVM, I sound like I used to work at DMV. Sorry. Sorry, Karen.
No problem.
Karen is owner of Onion River. And Erin Preston, who is – Erin, do I have this right? You're co-owner?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, and you are CVMP. You'll have to explain all that. And joining me, we split up the gang this morning. I'm in the news station, which I love this room. It's like the real deal. They've got screens all over. It's really cool. So Colleen Bloom is here with me. She's a DVM and original founder of Onion River. So I welcome you all. This is going to be an exciting show. So Karen and Erin, can you tell us, listeners, a little bit about yourself, what made you want to become a vet and eventually an owner of an animal clinic? Take it away.
Well, this is Karen Bradley, and thank you so much for having us, Pat.
No
so
problem.
So fun facts about our doctor letters. DVM is Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, which I am. And you have, with Colleen there, the one veterinary college that uses a different acronym. They use VMD, Veterinary Medical Doctor. So she can explain her pen roots there on that. But yes, and it is easy to mix up with the DMV.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I have been a veterinarian since 1996, which seems like yesterday sometimes and long, long ago when I deal with younger graduate veterinarians. I am someone who was a little late bloomer to being a veterinarian. Another fun fact about veterinarians is overwhelmingly, I think the statistic is something like 90 to 95% of veterinarians knew that's what they wanted to do by the time they were 8 years old. And that's a pretty young, I mean, I think I still wanted to be an astronaut back then. And so it did take, I was a freshman in college when I did a sort of a right-hand turn into veterinary medicine. I was always fascinated with science, loved biology and animals. But I was actually the music major and had a music scholarship. So my very practical father said I needed to do something more practical and I couldn't play my flute for a living. So I decided veterinary medicine intrigued me, and again, I had worked with animals a lot, and I thought, I think I could do that, and was able to get through college and veterinary school, a lot of years of work and training to get to where I am now.
Well, don't animals relate to music?
They do. We actually even know and use a lot of calming music nowadays in our exam rooms, even in the kennels.
Well, when things get a little crazy at the clinic, you can take out your instrument and play away.
There you go.
That's it. Thanks, Karen. Erin, you want to talk a little bit about your background?
Absolutely. Thank you for listening this morning, and thank you for having us here, Pat. My trajectory in our hospital is a little bit different. Colleen hired me while I was going to veterinary technology school at Vermont Technical College. I literally grew up in the practice. I started working as a kennel attendant, veterinary assistant, veterinary technician, became the inventory manager, and then eventually got my business degree and became the practice manager. I then went on to become a certified veterinary practice manager, and 3 years ago, I bought into the hospital with Dr. Bradley.
That's great. That's excellent. Now, Colleen, we're here in the bowels of WDEV in the news station. Could you tell our listeners a little about yourself and how you came to open Onion River, which originally was at 3 Mile Bridge Road, right in Middlesex. And did you not, I heard this from a source, you know, Steve Carey. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, how I came into vet med, I was never intended on it as a youngster, just like Karen. And the love of my life dog that I got at 18 was my trajectory. But I did have a sister in medicine and a brother in veterinary medicine, and I was trying to decide between the two. And vet med won because of my dog, I'm pretty sure. And then when I was finished my training and I did some extended training in New York City, my sister was in practice here, came back up, and Montpelier and the surrounds had the four oldest vets in the state.
Oh, there you go.
Dr. Carnahan, Dr. Dumas, Dr. Arms down in Randolph, and it just seemed right for a practice. So I found the Bailey Farm on 3 Mile Bridge Road, and we converted the barn into a practice.
That was a great facility. I like the one you're in now, of course, but that was just so cool to go there.
It has charm, yeah. And still does.
It was great. So then how did you come to move to Berlin? And thank you for that, since we live in Berlin. So does anybody have the background of why Berlin and why Airport Road?
I can answer that. This is Karen again. Yeah. And so we just were outgrowing the old facility. We had 3 exam rooms. We cared, and one of our biggest new things, I guess, over the last 8 to 10 years is focus on fear-free. You want to know what makes us unique, and that's one of them. And fear-free is really just a totally different approach to the animal's experience at the vet clinic. From when they walk in that door or are dragged kicking and screaming at times or panicked in their carrier, there is a fear response with stressful smells and things like that and noises. And so we knew evolving, we needed to have more exam rooms. They ideally would be spread out such that the cats who never live with a dog and the smell of a dog is going to incite fear in them would be in totally separate exam rooms, so a bigger lobby and a better experience for the patients and the owners. Not to mention anyone who went into our back sort of treatment area where we were all literally on top of each other. So we needed more space. And in doing so, we just couldn't do it in that building with many, you know, a barn like that that needs some big structural things. And we have a lot of codes that are for the safety of clients coming in, handicapped accessible, things like that, that in order to meet those, we would have almost had to tear everything down and build again. So then it said, well, let's look for, is there a location that might be amenable to that in an easier way and maybe even a little more central location? So when Lauren Quinn, who's still a valuable veterinarian and our medical director at our practice, she and I were working with Colleen to how can we evolve the clinic, and what ended up progressing was finding this place in Berlin and the remodeling of an existing building into the clinic it is now.
That's great. And you've got so wonderful staff. I know 2 of them really well because I think they've been with you since the beginning, Jameson and Nan.
Oh, yes.
And I always look for them when I come in, especially Jameson, because Coco knows him from the very beginning. So it's a great staff.
Thank you.
Well, I have to say, as you know, I'm struggling with my puppy at home these days, but we just had to put our cat down. She was 21, actually.
Wow.
21 years old. So that's a long time for a pussycat. And your staff, they knew we were coming. They knew why. The candle was lit. Because I said to Bruce, oh, they're going to light the candle.
Oh.
And sure enough, it was lit, letting people know why we were there. But they were wonderful because I didn't know what to expect. And I thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's just obviously, if I ever come there with Coco, you may want to clear the place out.
Oh.
You're going to have about 10 candles.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the candle is a great, just sort of, it's a symbol. It's a symbol to, because we come into the clinic, we have happy, boisterous puppies or kittens and kids, and there's just an awareness that, oh, we should keep our voices down. Mm. There's a private moment going on, and we want those people to experience it without our extra noise. And so I know my kids are teenagers now, but when they were little, having seen something like that with the little sign, I would have said, hey, guys, let's go over here and be quiet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's why the side door is helpful.
Yes.
We scooted right out. Anyway, speaking of services, let's talk about all that you offer at Onion River. And maybe Erin can talk about that.
Yes, some of the services that we offer are puppy and kitten care. We also do senior care, as well as we've started to offer more urgent and emergency as we've started to expand. So if you wake up in the morning and your pet is sick, we certainly want you to call us because we're more than happy to see your sick pet. We also have a surgical suite, and we're offering some specialty services these days. We're doing ultrasounds, echocardiograms. We have a board-certified orthopedic surgeon that comes every couple times a month, and offering lots of wellness care to keep everyone's pet very healthy.
That's great. I know for emergency calls, you keep a couple of slots open every day so that if I have sadly called once or twice, and you can fit somebody right in so you don't have to wait. That's amazing. We've loved that. Just bring her right up.
Yeah, Pat, we really saw, as many people did, a stress on the system during the pandemic when we had to restrict, right, and even phases where we couldn't have our people come into the building with their pet. So we had to really pivot and work really hard, and that seems so long ago, but it was so recent. And one of the biggest things that came out of that was sort of a lot of people noticing that their pets had an illness or an injury and needed to be seen, and a lot less capacity of veterinary clinics in the state or the whole country, really, to fit them in. And so we made it a priority and have maintained it that we keep, you know, and occasionally those don't fill. And as a business owner, that can be a little ouchy, but we have really made it a priority for us to keep appointment time so that we don't have to say no, so that most of the time when people call, we can offer them to come on down or to get in at 1 o'clock or something like that, so that they don't have to necessarily go to an emergency clinic for something that's not an emergency, but it's important or urgent and needs attention.
And while the emergency care in Burlington is wonderful, it's a long ride. And when from Berlin anyway, and when you have the dog on your lap and you know something's wrong, it's a long ride. So it's good that you've got some time to take us in. So I wanted to talk about wellness care a little bit more, because that's the hot topic in medicine these days. So I know, Colleen, is that something you can talk about, what it's all about?
Sure. I really believe we are educators about preventive medicine, and that starts at birth and it basically ends at the other end. So every time anyone comes in for anything, we like to address all systems. For their annual, their 1 year wellness, as people are familiar with themselves, we go into more detail about diet and flea and tick medication we all have Lyme on the brain these days, so that's very important. But everything else. But we try to approach each case like that every time they're in. We can address other needs. And I always emphasize, we're always there. If you don't need us for till next year, but you have some questions, call us.
Right.
We have 9 vets. We have about 50 staff members, many, many highly educated technicians, and we will try to answer your questions over the phone or, if we deem necessary, get you right in.
That's great. And you do. That's great. I put down a question which we may have answered, but maybe not really. I asked about how do you handle the grief of putting down a pet, because you must know these pets. I mean, Coco's lived there for a couple of years with her diabetes and all the other stuff. So it must be very hard. I know the vet that took care of us with our cat expressed that it was hard for them. And I said, well, I'm sure it is. And it put a different light on the whole process. So maybe, I don't know, Karen, you want to talk about that? You guys can jump in, by the way.
we actually can be very good at talking over each other sometimes, which probably is not great for radio.
Sign of a good team.
But, yes, I mean, in a way, I mean, there's probably really eloquent sayings out there that aren't popping in my head that are about sometimes the hard things are the most valued. And one thing that always has struck me and brings happy tears and satisfaction to me about the whole euthanasia process is how many times we get thank you cards or flowers or a gift from a client. Not that those are, you know, expected at all, but when we get that and they are thanking us for taking their pet and them through the process in a happy, comfortable, peaceful way. I guess not happy, but comfortable ending. That just means that we did our jobs well. And like I said, we aren't doing it for thanks or gratitude. And you're right. In a way, the patients that we've seen birth till end of life, I had one last week like that, that is just so special because I can remember that puppy with the big, long, floppy ears bounding into the clinic. And here I am. At the end of life, when mobility is gone and quality of life we cannot maintain,
right.
And I'm giving them and their owner a peaceful ending. Mm. And so that, in a way, there's that comfort that comes with the difficulty in making it happen and making it go well. It is actually rewarding. It's much harder. And probably one of the other things you wanted to talk about, too, is, well, you know, the spectrum of care is this big term that's out there. But I guess the harder ones are when it's simply the cost of the care the pet needs,
right,
that the decision is made. And we really have always, since Colleen founded the practice, had to provide some type of charitable care to help bridge the gap. When we have something treatable, the last thing we want is someone to have to make that hard decision because of the funds. So that's where charitable care comes in and really gives us a little more ability to – that's the hardest thing we probably deal with.
I was just asked to ask one of you about dogs and bones. What bones can dogs eat? And I know chicken is one they can't eat. That one I know. Can anybody jump in and help me with that answer?
I'll defer to Karen, the surgeon, that has to take them out when they've caused problems.
Yeah. Well, it really depends on which veterinarians you ask. There are actually veterinary specialists, and one of them is dentistry. And I will say the veterinary dental specialists I have know and met have never met a hard animal bone they would let their dog chew on, because they always see the problems. You know, people who have bitten down on like a kernel from their popcorn and broke a tooth, right?
Right.
Needed a crown. Same kind of thing. So you're correct. Cooked bones get more hard and more brittle. So particular cooked chicken bones are pretty brittle, and they're not going to give much benefit to a dog, and they're more likely to have those little shards of those brittle bones cause issues as they try to digest and move them on through their digestive tract. But the raw ones probably can be digested, and some dogs will have problems. But then when you think of like the beef bones and those things, there are dogs who digest them just fine. If we think of dogs like that are maybe running around the woods or more closer cousins to coyotes, eating a raw, uncooked bone may be just fine for them. But then a lot of our more delicate dogs, and I have to confess to having some delicate digestive systems in my household dogs, they don't deal with them as well, and they do have the potential to break a tooth. That marrow, that really rich marrow on the inside, is very fatty, and there are dogs who will get, say, diarrhea from that. So I'm a fan of the synthetic bones, or watch how your dog chews it. If they just do the little gnawing, nibbling, they might actually have a little bit of a rub the tartar off their teeth effect. But if they're like doing that crack, and you're hearing that cracking sound from the other room, I'd worry about some teeth breaking.
Yeah, we follow this no bone rule in the house, because whatever that – I forget the name of the products that are guaranteed not to be destroyed by your dog, the toys?
Yes.
Well,
no
that's
such
not
thing.
True.
No
I
such thing.
I have spent
thing.
More $10 on these. Guaranteed, your dog cannot take the ears off or the nose or the feet. Wrong.
I have surgically removed a few pieces of indestructible toys from dogs' GI tracts as well.
It's true. My poor dog is lacking toys because of that. She just destroys them. Anyway, I wanted to go back a little bit to talk about people that can't pay. I know my dog's been through hell and back the last couple of years, and I am so grateful that we were able to do that with her, because I think it must be very disturbing to put your dog down because you don't have funds. And I just would feel just horrendous, and I'm very grateful. So you do help. You have resources that can help these folks?
We do, yes. And actually, I'd like for Colleen to speak a little bit about how the Charitable Care Fund was established by a dear friend of hers, Janet Anthony.
Yes, like I said, we've had some sort of charitable care help since the day we opened, but a little more formally, maybe 10 years into it, those of us older listeners will remember Janet Anthony and Libby Turner. They were ER docs up at Central Vermont Hospital, and they were just two incredibly wonderful people. And they were cat people, and they took extraordinary care of their cats and everybody else's cats. Janet got into real estate in Barrie towards the end, and there wasn't any low-income housing that she didn't care for the people and the cats.
Nice.
I don't mean she personally did everything, but she saw to it. So when she sadly died prematurely from cancer, we all went, and we were just all so fond of these two. And our technician, Joy, who had been with us for many, many years, she said, why don't we start a fund in Janet's name? She's done so much for animals. So we started the Janet Anthony Fund, and it was just great. And then it evolved.
I think Colleen wanted to finish up a little bit on the discussion of low-income folks. Could you talk a little bit about that again?
Yes. It's been a problem since day one. I've been in practice 45 years, and it was a problem then, and it's a problem now. I think it's a more difficult problem in that we have so much technology. Technology, as we all know, is a blessing and a curse. And it adds tremendously to the cost of veterinary medicine in so many ways, computers alone. So I like to emphasize, and it goes back to wellness, we like to take a holistic approach to the animal. The animal is not, the pet is not just the pet sitting there with its own needs. You have a family and other animals involved, and we have to try to ferret out what is the best approach for this pet in this situation? What position does it have in the family? Some, it's a completely valued, beloved family member. Others, you know, it's a backyard dog. Not that they're not as important or deserve good help. But, you know, it's a philosophical approach to how much money you have and or want to spend on the animal. But we often revert back to, we often call it cowboy medicine. We practiced good medicine 40 years ago without all the technology we have today. Palpation, good physical exam, good history. There's an old adage in vet med saying, don't let a dog die without the benefits of steroids and antibiotics. Mm-hmm. We do treatment trials. So we can have a very sick animal, and yet, if we decide with the owner and their family that the better approach is we can't go down the road of expensive diagnostics. We have to help them and their quality of life right. as best we can. We call it a palliative approach. I know our society equates palliative with hospice quite often, but palliative just means keeping a pet comfortable or a person as long as you can, and maintain quality of life. So we really try to help the people, not through just charitable funds, but finding the right approach to that animal.
I love when you said palliative. We, Bruce and I, when we hear palliative, we think end of life. And so we're in Maine and Bruce is in the hospital and they said we should bring in the palliative team. And Bruce and I, you know, just like, whoa, what? And we just, and they explained, and they saw our face, and I said, you all need to get together on this definition, because we're like, obviously somebody's not telling us something about Bruce.
But that is so true. I mean, palliative care should start at birth and end at death. Absolutely.
Well, I wish we had known that definition at the time, because we didn't. We just went into shock. Anyway, I did, for this show, I did some research, and I read an article about owning a vet clinic, and one of the sections was headed, wait, they didn't teach us that in vet school. And I wanted to ask each of you, what's your answer to that question? What have you come across that they didn't teach you in vet school, and you're like, hey, wait a minute. Karen, anything come to mind when I asked that question?
Well, I think I don't know. How we teach in vet school has evolved. So when they didn't teach Colleen – fast forward another decade before they...
Is this an age discussion here?
Yeah. Decade and a half, ladies. Things they didn't teach me. What I didn't really learn was how much I would need to try and understand people. We don't get a psychology degree. And, you know, most people go into animal medicine thinking, oh, I want to work with animals. Every one of these animals is attached to a person.
Right.
And so we have to work with people. And so you're probably the interpersonal skills with your coworkers and the clients. Yeah. It takes a lot of awareness of yourself and how you're dealing with those situations. So yeah. I'd say probably the people issue.
Well, as a client, you can feel that when you walk into the office, whether it's cohesive and that there's a nice atmosphere there that you feel comfortable with, because you can pick up on either one that's not not cohesive, and one that is. So, Erin, you have any answers to that question?
Well, honestly, you know, when you're thinking about the care of animals, so much comes into play on the business side of things, and hiring the right people, and you know, overseeing the support team, as well as you've got your overhead costs, you know, your inventory for your medications, and can all get a little bit tricky, because some people don't quite understand that, you know, we are a small business, but we are also veterinarians that are seeing patients to care for pets.
Right. That's great. Colleen, do you have the older member of the team here?
Well, definitely communication and psychology is not there, but I think back to business, like Erin said, finances. Finances are huge, of course, with running a business, but that, you know, we can pass that over to Erin, who is highly trained there. But also, and this I think has improved, the cost of veterinary medicine. We have students, we have fourth year students with us, probably over half the year. Huh. And they're doing a better job at teaching them about what, how hard it's going to be to pay back this money. But we have had multiple kids, I call them kids, multiple kids that are going to owe $300,000 to $500,000, and I'm not exaggerating. I came in one morning and looked at this young lady, and I said, I couldn't sleep last night thinking of your debt load.
Yep.
And she just simply said, I will never pay it back. I yep. know that, and I want to be a veterinarian. Yep. But when reality hits, it's a real burden on them. So I think now, back in the day, we weren't taught about finances, but nor did we have that debt load. Now with these kids with debt loads like this, it's really important.
It's like having
to
a
teach
mortgage.
Them. Or a bigger mortgage than you would than you could afford.
Unbelievable. That's staggering. Now I'm upset. Because they want a life themselves. They want to meet somebody, have a family, have a home. And how can you have a home and all of the perks of adulthood when you're paying off $300 to $500 debt? Wow. I actually work with somebody who a few years ago, and he's in his 40s, he finally paid off his college debt, and he was so excited. I went, good Lord. I didn't realize that. Anyway, I want to just change the subject a little bit. We watch Dr. Pohl and a whole bunch of vets on TV. Do you guys ever have an emergency come in that's not a cat or a dog? And what are those little creatures, and have you treated them?
We do. So this is Karen again, and I will answer this because one of the things that we do at Onion River Animal Hospital is we do see exotic pets, and we also occasionally, of course, have a person who finds an injured wildlife animal that we can help with at the beginning, just sort of at the very basic. Vermont does have a very good wildlife rehabilitation network of people who are experts in almost anything. I think Colleen has a story of an injured heron from years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that heron. I didn't know what you said. Heron.
That was a great one. It was a great blue heron.
Yeah.
And just a majestic bird. And it came in with a broken leg. And I like to think that I'm a good networker. Used to be all by phone. Now, of course, it's mostly on the internet. So I, of course, immediately got on the phone with Steve Metz. A lot of you may have known him.
Yes.
He was the exotic bird man of Burlington forever. And my first job was 1978 in Burlington. And I shared emergencies with Steve. And he said, okay, first, tape his beak. There is a one-eyed veterinarian and there's a one-eyed wildlife biologist in Maine. They go after shiny things. It was like, I would never have known that.
Oh.
I taped the bird's beak, stabilized it, and got it down to fins.
Yep.
And same with, like, well, my stupidity. An owl comes in, and I forgot about their talons. They don't have a beak problem. And, of course, the talons, you know, my whole arm is just, bleeding profusely after he attacked my arm with the talons. So it has challenges, but we muddle through it. And we get them to where they need to go. And as far as exotics these days, boy, it's easier than in the original days. There was just no literature. Now we have the internet.
And
you
by
know,
exotics,
and,
you mean?
Exotics is anything, we referred to them as anything but dogs and cats.
Oh, I see.
So birds, ferrets, turtles, all the little what we call pocket pets. And thankfully, we have huge amount of resources on the internet these days.
We always had ferrets. As my daughter growing up, she loved ferrets. They bite. My father's sitting on our couch, and the ferret comes along the top and heads right for his earlobe. He wasn't too quiet about the injury, my dad. But they just bite.
These pets, Pat, often have very specialized needs. So I would definitely encourage anyone out there listening who's thinking about a rat, a guinea pig, a hedgehog, one of these more, you know, a less common species. They have chinchillas. They have very specialized needs. We call it husbandry. But the bottom line, if they're not fed the right food, kept at the right temperatures, in the right type of enclosure, safety, and recognizing when they're sick, a lot of these animals can hide it very, very well. So they are tricky, and I really encourage people to do a lot of homework before they get those pets.
So I was just talking to Colleen, and we were talking about animal behavior because she corrected me that ferrets are one of the more gentler creatures. I think my dad didn't like the ferret, and I think the ferret knew it. Because all the ferrets we had were great with my daughter, so I take it back for any ferret lovers that are out there. That got us started talking about behavior and anxiety. And I bought one of those thunder shirts for the dog. I don't know if that worked or not, but she, in the beginning of riding the car, she was a mess. But anyway, can somebody talk about how you deal with the that diagnosis, and what do we do as pet owners?
Karen, you want to talk or you want me to start?
You go.
Well, it's a huge problem, and the pandemic really contributed to its escalation beyond, humans too. There's, volumes written about the anxiety and depression of people and the world today. And dogs pick up on that. Now, there's many, many reasons that we see more anxiety. In this day and age, we don't let dogs be dogs. Back in the day, like anyone that knows Temple Grandin, and she knows animal behavior fairly well, she said, when I grew up, they ran loose. They had a pecking order, very few fights. Yes, I'm hit by cars.
A pack.
But very few fights. They were allowed to be dogs.
Right.
We don't allow them to be dogs anymore.
Wow, that's
they
a statement.
They don't get to run free as much as they need, and people at long hours at work. But now, you know, with the pandemic, a lot of people got dogs, and the other dogs got used to them being there all the time. So they have separation anxiety when they leave, destructive behavior. It's just a horrible feeling.
Right.
They think they're going to die. So we start lecturing right from the first puppy visit, right from the first one. You have to leave this puppy alone at times safely. And they say, oh, no, we work at home. He's never alone. That's the problem. There will come a time where he needs to be alone. And crate training is very, very humane, positive crate training, extremely important. And we have all other kinds of counseling and referrals about behavior problems, but they are just so much higher than they used to be.
Well,
and our fear-free approach, you know, we try in-house and extrapolate it to at home.
I'm trying to think, I got help from you guys when we first got Coco. She was really young, and she was with a young man in UVM, and he was a college student. And she and her sister were under his care, but he would go out on weekends, and you know how kids are. And so she wasn't abused, but she was neglected and had separation anxiety and all this other stuff when she first came to us. And that was a challenge. Now, of course, I don't know. I get anxious when I'm separated from her. It's sort of reversed.
Right.
But anyway, because you watch dogs when they come into the clinic. Some handle it well, and some are just scared to death. You know, they're shaking, and it's really sad. You know what helps, though? You have some kind of thing you put in the air.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you spray it on collars.
Yes.
What is that called, Karen?
Yes, those are pheromones. And so I have definitely enjoyed the evolution in my career and all these years of us starting to, with this whole Simone Beta marketing and a whole thing of training and certifying clinics in this fear-free approach of just actually zooming back and stopping and thinking. Some of this is common sense, but some of it's not. What am I asking this animal to do? Why are they paying attention to their body language? Why are they stressed? What can I do to minimize that and make this a less stressful thing so I can actually trim those nails or examine the foot or look in the ear or in the mouth, be able to give shots with less pain and being distracted? So all of those things, and one factor are pheromones. The behavior specialists recognized years ago, pheromones are these chemicals that all animals secrete. We do too, but different mammals and different animals have a different sensitivity and knowledge they use from it. So my biggest way I can picture pheromones is like when your cat, they take their little face and they bump and rub it against the furniture or yourself, and then they'll sniff that piece of furniture later and they'll rub again. They're smelling those, or their pat, you know, they do the little treading or kneading with their paws, making biscuits. They are literally leaving behind their scent glands, those pheromones. And there are about 20 that are the happy comfort pheromones. And then there's just as many stress pheromones. And so years ago, they synthesized a chemical version of the cat comfort pheromones, the ones that give them that happy comfort feeling, and the same for dogs. And then that's what we have in sprays and in diffusers to try and at least have that calming smell. Most people who have more than one cat can think of a time where they took one cat to the clinic and then they brought it home. And the one or other cats at home sniffed that cat and hissed like, oh, and they were like, oh yeah, 'cause the cat smelled like the vet clinic. Well, no, the cat smelled like those stress pheromones. And so these calming ones really do. We can tell there are many owners who can really see my cat's a lot calmer in this room than they were in the car or than a previous different exam room. And so we say, well, it's the pheromones. It really does make a difference.
Yeah, I know when we first got Coco diagnosed up at the clinic with diabetes, and we brought her home and we started having to give her insulin shots, which, by the way, is very expensive, just saying. And
collar.
Yes, and I sprayed it,
mm-hmm.
and it really works. You could tell the difference. I talk about insulin because it's in a small vial, and you have to you can't use it all the way down to the end. And it's the same price everywhere. So it's not one particular clinic versus another. It's the cost. Oh, but there's nothing much you can do about it, I know. So anyway, I was just wondering how you all keep up with the latest trends in diagnosis and treatment and pharmaceutical advancements, because I'm sure that there's so much changing that it happens quickly, just like it's happening in healthcare these days with us humans.
It is. I'm actually glad you brought that up, Pat, because that is one of the things that we, Colleen and I, were talking about. Like, what, you know, what is it about being a veterinarian, and what are the things that we really like about it? And one of them is, and anyone who's interested in this profession, is it is lifelong learning. And that is one of the things we love about it. We love that there's a newer, better way to do something than there used to be. So much of what we do in animal medicine starts as human medications that people do studies, or they try and we find that they work for a pet for a condition. And so, yes, yeah, so we are very fortunate, because having a group of doctors, we literally learn every single day. There's not a day that goes by. There's not a conversation or rounds, as we call them, in our doctor's office with 2 to 4 or 5 doctors talking about a case that's different, interesting. What should I do next? I kid around with clients that they come to Onion River and they get like 5 doctors' opinions for the price of one sometimes. And that's a bit real value. But we have access to online forums that we pay a subscription fee to, that are run by veterinary specialists.
Oh, excellent.
We get consults when we do lab work. We get right on the phone with an internal medicine specialist, a dermatologist, whoever we need to talk to about those cases, and try to network and learn. And then we are required to do continuing education. You should. It's an interesting fact to look up what professions in our state that are regulated, that are medicine, require continuing education and don't. And, you know, human nurses in our state do not have to do any continuing education at all to work on humans. But I have to do 24 hours of continuing education every 2 years. Hmm. And we do more than that. We do more hours than that because we do want to learn. And it's not always the newest, most expensive thing.
Yep.
Sometimes it's a new use for an old cheap drug that finally we're figuring out how to use. So I think it's very important.
Excellent. So we've only got about a minute or two. Do you have anything you want to wrap up,
Colin? Wanted to say something about – I never thought I would do an advertisement for insurance. One of my least favorite things. But that having been said, we are really strongly suggesting pet insurance these days, because it makes the decision tree so much easier. We recommend it to every puppy. Puppy is when you need it, with no pre-existing conditions. And as I say, the insurance company always wins. And if you're an excellent saver, maybe you don't need it. And it's not for the very wealthy. It's not for the very poor. But those in between, that $5,000 to $10,000 makes a difference. When we send a dog in with a broken leg, it can be $5,000 to $7,000 easily. And it's just really, really sad to see the inability to do that. And insurance does really help. Like I said, I never thought I'd do an insurance.
Well, that's okay. This is very helpful to know. I know people have it. I've always thought they didn't cover so much, but maybe it's a little late for me and Coco. They wouldn't take her at this age. But thank you all very much for coming to the show. Folks from Onion River Animal Hospital on Airport Road, right, in Berlin. Aaron Preston, Karen Bradley, and Colleen Bloom, thank you very much. I know I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Pat McDonald, your host for Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Stay tuned. Eric Chittenden is coming back with awesome news about the Waterbury Reservoir and wake boats.